and welcome to the Holmes Movies Podcast. My name is Anders Holmes, and I am an aspiring filmmaker living in Copenhagen, Denmark. In between making short films, writing screenplays, and unsuccessfully looking for jobs, I do this podcast. Each episode, we discuss one particular film. Today, I am joined by my older brother, Adam.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Adam, what scares you?
Oh God, everything. I'm driven by fear. Not a big fan of flying, I'll give you that.
I don't think most people these days are a fan
no.
of flying.
Well, no, I mean, it's quite frightening. You know, little tube full of, you know, fat people hurtling through the air full of aviation fuel and people's shit.
Remember the George Carlin?
Oh, yeah, airplane safety. Wonderful, wonderful sketch.
And breathe normally.
Yes, exactly. I don't like. I really don't like big rats.
Oh, you had one in Venice.
Yes. I was in Venice, and I mean, I knew I was scared of them before that because in Basil the Great Mouse Detective,
Ratigan. Oh, Ratigan.
Yeah, that's really scary. Anyway,
yeah, I was in bat as well. The bat.
I was in Venice.
Shit out of me more.
And I was walking through this alleyway, and suddenly this rat the size of a fucking cat just appears out of a crevice in the wall or something.
Yeah.
And it's just me and it in this tiny little alley between two buildings. And it sees me and just totally loses its bananas. It starts running in circles, like running across my feet. I'm just like frozen to the spot. Yeah. It tries to go into a hole. It's too fat. This just makes it more confused. Finally, it tears like a greased weasel through my legs and out the other side of the alley. And I just traumatized, walked back to the hotel. It was awful, very awful. So yeah, don't like big rats. Don't. I tell you what else I don't like. I don't like swimming in really deep water.
Ah, yeah, I don't like that either. In talking about with water, you know what scares Taylor Swift, the singer?
No.
Sea urchins.
Sea urchins. Really?
They scare her to death.
Hmm.
But there's a good cure for that. Stay out of the ocean. Talking about today is the 1975 big blockbuster classic Jaws.
No, I was doing the trumpets. You were supposed to continue doing the.
Are we doing it right?
I don't know. No, it just sounds a bit like that. I think John Williams rips off a lot of his stuff, but anyway, let's.
Well, a lot of his music just sounds the same anyway, to be honest. Apart from that,
he rips off himself. You know what? He did a wonderful theme for Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg is the porn director.
Really?
No, I made it up.
Oh, right, okay. That'd be brilliant. Because it doesn't even have a porny thing. He's just like, yes, it sounds a bit like, no, I haven't changed my name. Otherwise, I'd call myself like Steven Filmer of Cox.
He, Steven Filmer of Cox.
Oh, shut up. Wow, what a film. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, let's start with Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, so as I was saying, John Williams had written that great film for, great score for his first film, The Sugarland Express, which you've not seen.
I have not seen it. The Golden very good. Woman, Goldie Hawn.
Yeah, very, very good. And yeah. Ben Johnson's in it. Ben Johnson's wonderful. Very good film. Lovely, you know, road movie. It's funny, it's sweet, it's very sad, actually, as well. I think it came before Duel. Or Duel came before one of the, but
I think Duel came afterwards.
Yeah, but that's very good.
And I mean, I don't know if that's more of a TV film than it is a.
Yeah, I think that was a TV.
It wasn't made for cinema.
But so
it,
maybe that was before. DVD. Sugarland Express is a cinematic release, so maybe Duel did come before. I mean, we really could look this up, but
it's
quite late. We're quite lazy. Anyway, moving on.
But
the point that I was trying to make was, he is asked to make Jaws. And he's not done a lot. He's done Duel and the Sugarland Express. And
yeah, he's tackled with like a quite a large ambitious
it's quite a big
film.
Quite a big project. And,
I mean, if you look at like a lot of the films that have been made beforehand like that, they like the Moby Dick film with Gregory Peck, that's kind of like nothing compared to this movie at all. It's just that's just like a huge model going all over the place.
Right.
John
Huston directed that. That's supposed to be some wonderful moments.
I think, you know, well, to be fair, actually, there's a relatable thing to it because a scene in the film was going to introduce Robert Shaw's character, Quint. he's supposed to be the first scene that introduces him, not the originally they had a scene written where he's in a cinema all the way in the back and they're showing Moby Dick and he's laughing really loudly, like kicking everyone out of the room, like smoking his like cigar and stuff, kind of like the Cape Fear scene. And I think he's laughing at all the special effects of it. And they couldn't get the rights to show Moby Dick because Gregory Peck like owned them, and Steven Spielberg tried to get them off, get the rights.
I won't let you watch this film. I do not approve. That's a terrible Gregory Peck.
Actually, Gregory Peck doesn't approve of the film. I think he doesn't approve of his performance in the film because he doesn't find it's his best, or he wasn't happy with it.
I didn't capture the... Oh, it just sounded like a... I can't do... I'll work on my Gregory
Peck. He wasn't good as Captain Ahab. But then again, I think one of the original things with Quinn's death was he was supposed to have this kind of Captain Ahab sinking.
Well, it's very obvious, the parallel, I think.
But yeah, but he wasn't supposed to die in the way that he does in the movie. He dies by, you know, with the shark falling in, the corpse of the shark falling into the ocean with Quint attached to it.
I think that would have been better.
Yeah, maybe.
I think I saw a storyboard or something for that once. It's an amazing image. The problem is...
Well, because in the book he's killed by a harpoon.
Who?
The shark.
Really?
Well, I think from what I've gathered from... I haven't read the book, I've only...
I quite like to read the book. It sounds like the sort of classic, sort of trashy fun you'd read.
Well, yeah, I think Steven Spielberg, he said he didn't like... Well, he was rooting for the shark in the movie more than the characters because he found the characters unlikable. And Peter...
What's-his-face? Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah, he's up there. Guys, you know, like, hello. Yeah, he's such a whiny little... Like, it's a tiger shark. The person you're really rooting for in that film is Quint. I mean...
Quint, yeah.
Oh, what?
Y'all know me. You know how I make a living.
Y'all know me. Still the same old G, but a bit low-key. Sorry.
That fish, swallow your hole. The head, the tail, the whole damn thing.
Robert Shaw is one of my all-time favourite actors. He's so good, and he was so... didn't give a shit about cinema. So he did so much crap. Spent his entire life... I'm pretty sure he spent his entire life drunk.
Well, he was drunk. Well, actually, he was drunk quite a bit on this set. Like,
You can tell.
Yeah, in the scene that... I think they were... Like, the famous Indianapolis scene he did want to kind of play that scene drunk...
But I love that. A method acting. Like, no, you're not. You're just an alcoholic.
Yeah. There's truth there and stuff. No, but he actually...
There's no fucking truth there. But there was a lot of...
But, like, Roy Scheider did say that he was sober. He was the nicest person that he ever met. But when he was drunk off his ass, he said he was, like, a competitive son of a bitch.
I think he had a lot of issues. I mean, I know that...
Well, during the film, he had problems with the IRS, so he didn't make any money off this movie at all.
I suppose it's a bit like Brando in The Godfather. I mean, yeah, he's just... he was such a marvellous actor, and it's a shame he didn't do more great performances. The Sting's not... For me, it's not a great film. I think it's actually a rather disappointing follow-up to...
Butch Cassidy.
To Butch Cassidy, which is so good. But, he's in... One of my sort of all-time, it's not even a guilty pleasure, but it is obviously not a great film, but it is ridiculously entertaining, and that's Force 10 from Navarro.
Really, really fun, yeah.
Really fun movie. Wonderful cast. Harrison Ford, you know.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. What else is it? Custer of the West, that's pretty crap.
You think it would turn into a bird?
Yeah. Yes, there's actually... Yeah,
there's a lot of inaccuracy.
That's a really not... Well, inaccuracy, that's the first problem they have.
Jeffrey Hunter's in there. He plays the Captain Benteen.
From The Searchers. Who plays Martin, yes. Yeah. That's right. That was one of his last films, because he died quite young.
Yeah, he died. He had a stroke in mid-flight on a plane.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it was that. Oh, God.
Yeah, he was quite
young. Now I hate flying even more.
Yeah. I think he was quite young. I mean,
he was in his 40s, I think.
Yeah, or his late 40s, early 50s kind of period.
It's very sad.
But that movie, learning about that film is more like the whole making of the film is much more a little bit more interesting than the actual film itself, because it was such a problematic getting the film made.
It's very interesting because, as I say, you know, they hire this young, promising but still sort of untested director.
Well, most of the people in that period were untested. I mean, reading. Have you read Peter Biskin's Easy Rider, Raging Bulls?
No, I haven't, but I'd love to.
You'd like that. It's basically just a film about like untested individuals who love cinema and want to do art and not really caring what the studio kind of puts in their way. And it's kind of like it's before producers have kind of had such a kind of hold on their, like, what the directors actually do. And, you know,
well, they did have before.
Well, yeah, they did. But I think this one, they kind of, you know, with the fact that, you know, you had success, like Arthur Penn's Bonnie and Clyde, Warren Beatty, he tried really hard to get that film financed, and he actually did say at one point, "I'm going to get down on my knees and suck your dick if you don't give me money." And then,
really,
that actually worked. He didn't suck his dick, but then they thought, "Okay, this guy's good."
You don't know that.
Nah, well, I don't. Well, but there's a lot that happens in that
one. And then, well, anyway,
and also it was interesting because there was all these directors. They made a lot of money. They were popular with critics and audiences. And they sort of said, what are you going to do next? Oh, I got this movie. We'll go do it. We'll leave you alone doing it. But then I was...
Yeah,
then,
but
then, every time then, if they won an award or they made a lot of money, they would have, like, at least two successes. And then after that, any film they did after that would be just not liked by the audiences, or critics would not understand them at all, and they would make no money, and then they would just fall into the abyss, basically.
Or they'd make 1941, which is supposedly one of the worst films of all time. They are interesting, because the three films of this period that really, as you say, set that path. And one of the things, I don't agree that this was a period sort of completely free from studio interference, but there was a sort of
had a bit more creative control of what they really
wanted. Yeah, but
really
they fought for it, you know. Yeah. They really did have to, because the thing was, on the, you know, The Godfather, for example, was another similar situation. You have a young, relatively untested director in Francis Ford Coppola doing a film that's going to be quite big, that the studio are investing a lot in. And he is, from the beginning, able to insist on having Al Pacino, and he's... and having Marlon Brando, which is a big gamble as well.
Because he was
a complete fucking lunatic. And the studio were just hovering around the whole time. They had people on set, like, watching Pacino to see what the hell was this guy supposed to be doing. And then they were toying with the idea of firing Francis Ford Coppola. Similarly on Jaws, I think that they were seriously contemplating firing Spielberg because they went so far over budget.
And they were under schedule as well.
And then, obviously, the third film that I think fits this pattern is Star Wars.
Yeah.
Where George Lucas, later. Exactly. And each film made more money than the last. They were the sort of the original three blockbusters. Star Wars was huge. And obviously, as you say, after that, these guys could do no wrong. They were they were bankable, they were money-making. But they did have to, I think they really had to fight for that.
Yeah, I know, they control. Did, yeah.
And they all made serious stipulations. You know, when The Godfather was so successful, they said, "Oh, you got to make another one." He said, "Okay, I will, but I'm going to go make The Conversation first." And as you say, no one, you know, that's a film that,
I don't think
didn't necessarily
people,
do
I,
that well.
I don't
yeah.
really think. But, I mean,
so, but
it does feature one of Gene Hackman's best performances of all time, and actually features a very creepy Harrison Ford, actually.
What, in The Conversation?
Yeah.
I didn't realise Harrison Ford was in that.
He's quite creepy in that movie.
Oh, cool. I really need to see that. That's yeah. very much on my list.
I might bring it back after I've seen it again. I remember watching it. I think I was 14 at the time when I watched it.
I was a bit young, isn't
it? Yeah, it was slow for me at the time, but I think if I watched it again, I would enjoy it. But it's interesting reading that book and just seeing this whole interesting period of how, you know, they were making all these good movies, Godfather, Chinatown, everything. Star Wars.
Well, Easy Rider was
Easy
sort of
Rider
like the
was one
that
kind of started
that,
yeah. I mean, it's often quite sad with some of these directors, like Hal Ashby. You know, he kind of just fell into nothingness, and he's one of the best directors who, you know, made Harold and Maude, Coming Home, The Last Detail, and films like that, being there with Peter Sellers, and he was such a great director, and he kind of just fell into...
Well, sometimes you get these directors who exist, who sort of burn bright for a short period and then fade away, a bit like Preston Sturges in the...
I mean, William Friedkin had that as well, the guy who directed the French Connection to The Exorcist. He had, like, a period in the 70s, and in the bit of the 80s where he was just making a lot of great movies. You know, French Connection, he won Best Director.
That's a great film.
Exorcist, that was one of the highest grossing horror films of all time at the time. And it actually was, it's the only, I think it's, well, before Silence of the Lambs, it was the only horror film nominated for a lot of Oscars. And so if you kind of just look at that whole period, and then you get to, like, the early 80s, and Michael Cimino did Heaven's Gate and fucked it up for everybody.
Yeah, that was sort of that. He really, as you say,
that was in the nail in
the shark.
That was in the nail in the coffin. I think.
Well, because he's so that's a really good good example of where this stuff can go too far, because he really admittedly, I haven't seen the film, but he really was...
I'd like to see the movie.
...completely nuts making that film. They spent so much money on just... And he was in retakes and...
Horses died.
Horses and all this nonsense, you know. And it was, you know, difficult locations. I mean, and then it was, you know...
They were shooting in Montana.
17 hours long. And
yeah.
They, I mean, completely bonkers when you read... So, I read a book recently, a wonderful book called The Whole Equation... By David Thompson, who's a really good writer, and it talks a lot, obviously, about the business side of... it's a history of Hollywood, and it very much kind of focuses on the business side of things. It goes right back to Thalberg and Mayer and all those guys in the 30s and before. Mm. And, you know, really is constantly just saying, follow the money. But if you follow the money...
That's a line from all the president's
men. Yes, well, if you follow the money in Jaws... brings you to an awful lot of problems on a film that, you know, probably was always going to cause some issues because they had to get around the special effects issue. They were working on open water.
Weather was changing. They were shooting on location in Martha's Vineyard. The water was ridiculously cold. They were working with locals and they paid them $64 just to be scared and everything. And
also, well, they actually just like pulled people off the street. It was like,
And also, like, Robert Shaw, he was having problems with the IRS. So anytime that he was like on set, he'd have to go back to Canada when he wasn't on break so that he wasn't, you know, in trouble or anything.
And literally fleeing across the border.
Yeah, basically. And also, well, the most important thing that they went into troubles with was the star of the film, the shark, didn't fucking work most of the time.
Bruce! Which is a lovely reference in Finding Nemo.
Hello.
Yeah.
Name's Bruce.
I never knew my father. He's just Barry. That's Barry Humphries, isn't he? He voices him.
Yeah.
Dame Edna.
I think Eric Banner voices one of the other shows.
Yeah. Oh, that is. Can we talk about Finding Nemo?
Yeah.
That's a wonderful
I love that movie.
Yeah.
The shark proved very difficult.
Well, it just broke all of a sudden.
Well, yeah. I mean, the first thing that they did.
It is shit. I mean, when you see it, do you remember?
Still looks fake.
When we were children, we went to Universal Studios, remember? Yeah. And they have the actual Bruce.
Jump out of the water and going on the tour.
In this little weird like pond, basically.
Yeah, and so basically, people who've never been to Universal Studios, there is like a tour train ride thing that takes you through the studio, going through all these little things, and you have like you go through one set, and there's stuff going happening, and then you see King Kong like pulling the rails and stuff, and then you get to this one area where it's basically made to look like Amity Island. And
the shark doesn't.
And the shark just kind of pops out of the water as you're going by, and I just remember looking at it going, still looks fake.
Yeah, but it's like that bit in
Back to the Future.
Yeah, exactly. It does.
Sorry, still looks fake.
It looks totally crap.
I do like when they
the best shots of it are when it's coming out of the scariest moment. Where you see the shark, because all the most scary moments of the films are when you don't see it.
Yeah.
The scariest moment
Which works
for me
to their advantage.
When you see it is when it's appearing out of the gloom. And in a lot of those sequences, they'd
used real footage.
Yeah, they used footage of a real shark, and they got this great footage of a great white, like, tearing up a shark cage.
Yeah, and it got stuck on top of the shark cage with somebody actually in it, and they used that for the film.
Yeah, I think that's really good footage. And as soon as you get it, and you know, the bit where it comes out of the water where he's throwing the chum and it just sort of pokes its head up, and you get the, you know, you're going to need a bigger boat line.
Yeah.
It looks just terrible. It's just this kind of weird papier-mâché head just appears out of the sea. But that's kind of now when you watch it, that's part of the charm of the whole picture. I think the first time you see it and you are scared, that's when the fear starts to go away a little bit. Although I still maintain it's... fundamentally a very exciting situation that they find themselves in on the Orca at the end. Yeah. You know, it turns into this kind of
men on a mission.
You don't really feel a sense of threat. You're like, well, these three guys, they're going fishing. What could, you know, they've got to be careful, but they've probably got guns and stuff, right?
They got a lot of stuff.
And then you realize, like...
I mean, Hooper's got something that can...
10 minutes,
yeah.
And it just wrecks the boat. It totally... And you're like, fuck, they are going to die. And I think that's... watching it now, you know, you're like, it's all going to be fine. But I think the first time I watched it, I was very concerned.
Yeah. First time I watched it, I think.
Well, first time you watched it, I remember you were not very old at all, and you kept.
I think I was
kept
six
finding,
or seven. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. That was traumatizing, nice and early. But yeah, you kept finding excuses to go out of the room, which was very cute.
Yeah. No. You kept not.
It wasn't because you were scared. You just needed something. You kept being like, be back. Don't pause it.
I still think the shark's POV from under the sea when it's going up to get the girl when she's bathing naked in the beginning of the movie. It's just, that's the most terrifying shot in the thing. It's just your fear of deep water, not knowing what the fuck's underneath you.
Well, I would never.
Yeah.
You'd have to get me so drunk to be like,
but that's
swimming
like
in the sea is a good idea. No, in the middle of the night, no.
That
sequence just, it sets it up. And then you have this, you have the cop, Roy Scheider.
Roy Scheider, yeah. Chief Brody.
Exactly.
Who originally...
Chief Adrian Brody.
Originally, someone like Charlton Heston, they actually played the role.
Really?
Yeah, I think Steven Spielberg didn't want a lot of stars in the movie. I mean, they looked at like Lee Marvin for Quint.
Oh, that would have been great, though.
Yeah, but he said he wanted to really just go fishing. And they nearly got Sterling Hayden as Quint as well.
Oh, that also would have been amazing.
But he was having problems with the IRS, so they got Robert Shaw instead.
That is all three of those inventors. I'm glad Robert Shaw, and Robert Shaw will always be Quint. It's his iconic performance, but I would have loved to see. I'd love to just see a screen test as Sterling Hayden be like, you know, hey, I was on the Indianapolis. I'm so drunk.
He's also a famous drunk actor as well. Yeah.
Yep, and famous adventure. He had a very interesting life, but we should talk about him another time.
But Roy Scheider.
Why don't we do an episode on a Sterling Hayden film?
Like,
have you seen Kubrick's The Killing?
Yes, I have seen
that. Now we could talk about that.
I've also seen The Asphalt Jungle, which is quite similar to The Killing.
That's really good. Yeah, I always get them confused in my head. I love The Asphalt Jungle.
Anyway. He's also in Doctor Strangelove as well. He plays...
Yo, I know.
That's George C. Scott. George C. Scott.
Casting. We're talking about casting. So Roy Scheider's really... I think he's really good. I think he's a lovely actor. He's excellent in practically everything I've ever seen him in.
Mm.
I really want to see... Is it All That Jazz?
Bob Fosse.
I want to see that one. Richard Dreyfuss is a problem for me. Everything he's in, he chews the scenery. He will not stop, you know, being annoying. But he is, in some ways, he's perfect for that part because he is like Mr. Annoying Science Guy who shows up.
But he's the annoying science guy that everyone needs to listen to.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But that makes him even more annoying, if anything. Because what I like is, really, I like Quint's philosophy, which is just like, as you say, the shark will swallow you whole. And you're just like, mm-hmm. Although it never actually does swallow anyone whole, and as Quint finds out, likes to chew on you a little bit first. Yeah. No shark's ever swallowed anyone whole. But his point is there. It's like we're dealing with a real fucker of a shark, and the only way, basically, we need to go out into the sea, get a little bit drunk, and go fishing.
Basically, stab him with a piece of poison.
And that's the thing. That's not as fun. Mm-hmm. This guy Tony, I'd be like, well, actually, what we can do is we can go on the same. He's like, no, let's get drunk and shoot cannons into the water. That's way going to be way more fun. So I do have a bit of a problem with Dreyfuss as an actor in general. I think he's completely irritating. For example, in
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Close Encounters, he's just like, would you shut up? I mean, he is, again, he's annoyingly good for these parts. The one that sticks in my craw that's just unforgivable is he plays Babyface Nelson in Dillinger, the Warren Oates movie. Which is really good. More people should see that film, and I think we're like two of the only people on the planet who have. But irritating in that film, and mercifully he's not in it for very long.
He does show up like towards like three quarters of the way into the movie when they're doing one robbery, and then he gets killed or something.
He's around. He has an argument, and then it all ends.
Basically, Dillinger is like the better version of Public Enemies.
That wonderful actor, what was his name?
Jeffrey Lewis,
Who just died. He's in that. He's rather good in it.
Yeah, he's really good. He's a great character actor. Well, really, really great character actor.
Yeah, that's got a kind of great... We're not talking about Dillinger. We're talking about Jaws.
Jaws, yeah.
We're so good at wandering onto tangents.
Yeah, actually, we go off on tangents.
It should just be the selling point. We should just rename the podcast Tangents. Who knows where it'll go?
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Andrew Holmes. I'm an aspiring blah, 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 blah. What are we talking about today?
Did you know that Taylor Swift don't like sea urchins?
Yeah, exactly. Well, random facts about Taylor Swift. Again, I'll tell you what, if we called the podcast something, something, something Taylor Swift, 3 million listeners every time, guaranteed.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that, put yeah. a cat up.
Just call it, Serial starring Taylor Twist. Taylor Twist? Taylor Swift.
Again, another porn name as well.
Taylor Twist. That sounds like a... Yeah. Actually, it doesn't sound like porn. It sounds like a cocktail.
Ah, Taylor Twist.
Yeah. Would you like a Taylor Twist? Sounds like a cocktail from, like, the tackiest kind of Vegas. Yeah, Liz Taylor. It's called Taylor Twist because Liz Taylor stayed here in 1973. Jaws. Yeah. Right. What else is good? So the music we've talked about, music's that sort of great. Speaks for itself, doesn't it?
Underwater shots is amazing. Like, so, it just really builds up tension. The fact you don't see the shark a lot of the time creates more... like tension.
Well, exactly, and that's because it, yeah. and that's because obviously the shark didn't work, and I think
you have to remember that
was because of a practical reason that they didn't, you know, they couldn't show it, but it ended up being the single greatest thing about the film, because the wonderful thing about this film is it's all in some ways Spielberg doing Hitchcock. Explicitly in that shot on the beach. It's a reaction shot of Roy Scheider's when he sees the attack,
Jaws shot,
and it's the
zooming in
as the camera tracks out and zooms in and say, but that was a shot
Vertigo
lifted
shot.
Directly exactly from Vertigo, and there's just a ton of stuff going on that's Hitchcock based, and Hitchcock himself realised this, and I think he was a bit sniffy about the film. I think that he sort of perhaps even thought that they'd come in on his patch a little bit. These kids. I remember hearing once they referred to it as that fish movie, which I think is, you know, quite.
That's quite a Hitchcock.
It's definitely. Though,
yeah.
But I think he'd lost the plot a bit by that point.
I think by that point he was kind of. He had done. I think 70. I can't remember when Family Plot happened. I think it was sort of towards the end of the
70s. I think it might be 79. I've seen Family Plot. I'm not a big fan of it.
It's quite. It ends very. Anticlimatically, and it's, I don't know, the woman...
Which is ridiculous, because Hitchcock...
Yeah, because he was...
The
king
of the
climax. He was kind of just building up to something.
Speaking of porn names.
He was building up... Very funny. He was building up to, like, this collaborate... No, it was... What's the word? Fight with, like, Bruce Stern and...
Fight, I'm fine. Thought you were like, dude, what is he scrabbling for there?
I don't know, it's just like the two couples in the film, like, you think they're going to end up in, like, some huge brawl or whatever at the end, because, like, they have Bruce Stern's wife, he goes to save her, and then they lock them both in the room where they lock all their, like, kidnapped victims, and I was just kind of like, that's fucking cheating. These guys are morons. They couldn't have done that. Well, the woman is a moron in the film, and she... fucking annoying as well. The woman who pretends that she's a psychic and she's like bringing Bruce Stern for a ride in this whole thing. And he's just like, if I was him, I would have been like, shut up.
So now we've turned it into the Family Plot podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Hitchcock hadn't really. When was Hitchcock's last good film? It might even be
Psycho.
Because what he makes The Birds after that, he makes Marnie, which Marnie is supposed to be really good. I've not seen it.
But his whole tumultuous relationship with Tippi Hedren kind of got in the way of those.
Yeah,
two films.
He apparently was really quite creepy with her.
Yeah. Obsessive to the max, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit rapey as well, apparently. Like a little bit sort of handsy. But we don't know for sure.
Allegedly
a little bit handsy.
It's like the whole thing with Bill Cosby. We don't know what happened.
Bill Cosby. Anyway, did he make it? Topaz is supposed to be awful.
Topaz with what's his face? Paul Newman, right?
No, that's Tom Curtin.
Oh, Tom Curtin,
which is also supposed to be terrible.
Topaz is the one where he's like in a wheelchair in an airport, and he gets up and shakes a guy's hand and walks off, like one of his famous cameos.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, Topaz is like
Hitchcock, yeah.
Yeah, Topaz is a... It's like a... Is it kind of like a 70s political thriller? Like a conspiracy thing?
Who gives
thing?
A fuck? It's not supposed to be very good. And nor is... Frenzy, I don't know. I've heard,
Frenzy's
I've heard
good.
Different
Frenzy's
things.
Good.
Oh, so that maybe that's his... He went back to London to do that.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
So we could say that's his... But anyway, Hitchcock... Is something is you know he's still working. He's a force that people are aware of in 1975, but he's also someone who's a little bit you know artistically off the boil. And then Spielberg shows up and does a great Hitchcock film, a bit like Stanley Donen's Charade or Charade, as it's pronounced. And there was an interview with Stanley Donen once about that actually, where they said, this is nonsensical pronunciation of. Charade, it's pronounced charade, and he goes, well, I don't say I would like a glass of lemonade. it's still, I mean, Americans should learn to speak properly.
And aluminum.
Aluminum, interestingly enough, more random trivia. The guy who discovered aluminium originally wanted to call it aluminum. But the scientific community at the time were like, no, we're using the eums on our elements, thank you very much.
How the fuck did we talk about movies and get onto a fucking science topic?
Good question. Well, I can't think of it. It's a Hitchcock film.
I wouldn't call it an imitation, I'd just say it's more like inspired, I guess.
I'd say more than that. I think it's directly using that language. But it is also very Spielberg, obviously. It has the John Williams. It has all these moments of tenderness, which he likes, especially with the family, kids.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And he likes to have...
but he always puts like family things in his movies all the time.
Yeah, he likes to show these scenes of people arguing or people feeling stress, people taking the plot of the film home. You know, that's what he does so well in E.T., showing how it affects the family. So he gets such great performances out of children.
He definitely put his own stamp on it. But I think what he does really well with the scares in this movie, especially with the head popping out of the boat.
God, that's brilliant. Even though I know it's coming now, I still jump out of the seat
as well. But it's also because he put that in as a way because he needed one big scare, because he knew after that the audience were going to be entirely on guard throughout the entire movie. So
waiting for
the shark to pop up, especially.
Yeah, because there's that bit where it comes through the window of the boat as it's sinking as well, which is quite...
Which was quite hard because the boat... sank quite uncontrollably, and everyone was like, save the actors, and one guy was, fuck the actor, save the sound.
Yeah. That is a really, really cool bit. And as I say, it is a scary film.
It's a very scary film.
But I think, it's not a...
But it actually has probably one of, my favourite moments is that drinking scene where they compare scars with Hooper and Quint.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, that's speaking of great moments, yeah. But that's not... That what's interesting about that scene is it's so well written, although Robert Shaw actually rewrote his speech.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who feel like they take credit for writing that. I think Robert Shaw was one of the people who rewrote it. I think Peter Benchley and Carl Gottlieb, they wrote versions of it that became meshed together. But I don't know. Wasn't there someone that you... I can't remember if you said this or not. I might have just made this up. But was there someone that you said... actually was the one who wrote the Indianapolis speech?
No.
Okay, I just made it up.
Yeah. Right, no, I don't know anything.
No. It's good. I remember because in the Indianapolis speech, he talks about the Hiroshima bomb.
Well, the boat, the Indianapolis, it was a true story. There was a boat called the USS Indianapolis, which delivered the atomic bomb to the island. I can't remember which island it was. One of the islands they had taken in the Pacific.
And as they were on their way back.
Picked up by, and then on the way back, they were torpedoed. They did get... And it turned into this feeding frenzy for sharks.
Yeah.
It was a terrible feature of the war in the Pacific. If a plane went down or if, a ship was sunk, the distances were so enormous.
Yeah.
Well, there's the famous PT-109 story, obviously, as well, with John F. Kennedy, who was...
What was with that?
He was captain of a PT boat that was also sunk, and they it was something that was where his back problems largely began. I think.
Wait, was there a shark involved in that?
Not really, no. So it's completely irrelevant.
Did the shark sink the PT boat?
It's completely irrelevant to this podcast. So anyway, scrap that. But
Jaws itself.
That's a fantastic scene though. Yeah. Because it moves from it starts, you know, kind of funnily with Quint and bloody Richard Dreyfuss.
But then he says, like, what's that in your arm? Oh, no, that one. Oh, that's some tattoo I had. I got it. Mother.
Yeah, exactly. Shut the fuck up!
Shut the fuck up, Johnny!
Yeah, exactly. It's like, be quiet!
No, but
let Quint talk.
But I like the way how, he never cuts away to any other's reaction. He just stays on Robert Shaw the whole time.
Yeah, but it's
such a really good moment.
It's one of those bits of, you know, the Quint speech. One must never overdo it too much. But talking about scares, it's actually quite frightening to listen to.
And you imagine, and also
the
wonder.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's of course the way he tells it is pretty.
But it actually, he's telling a story about the whole thing, but he's actually telling a story about himself, and that he's never going to go down with a lifeboat or anything, or he's not going to go in the water with a lifeboat.
This is a mission. That's his Ahab moment, isn't it? Because he's like, I'm in this to the bitter end. It's kill or be killed kind of thing.
I think that's pretty much it. I mean, I don't really know.
Sort of concludes Jaws, the whale sharks. What have we learned on this podcast? You and I know a little bit about a lot of things.
Yeah.
One of those things has been Jaws. I just think, maybe just to conclude, you know, I think it's one of those films that comes pretty close to being just perfect now, because it's like when you sit down and watch Jaws, it's one of the kind of 20 films that I can really watch anytime, you know, that film saying, you know, you can just put it on. It's like the Dirty Dozen or something. It's become that in my brain. I know that this isn't the best film ever made.
You wouldn't call it the best film ever made?
Of course I wouldn't. It's not a great film in that sense. It's well made, obviously, but it's a really great Sunday afternoon movie. That's what it is. It's the ultimate. It is the first of, you know, it's spawned, unfortunately, so much shite, but it is the first big summer blockbuster, obviously. And they're never going to make sort of cinema history. Exactly. These films are designed purely to entertain, and when they're good, they're very good and they are very entertaining.
But Jaws has that kind of iconicness to it. It has the music, it has the scares, it has the acting.
Oh, yeah.
The writing is good as well, even though it's a little bit flawed because, you know, Peter Benchley got his screenplay.
I'm not saying it's not it doesn't have all those things, but it's comfortingly iconic, I think, and it's comfortingly
familiar
when you sit and watch it and you're like, oh, I remember this scene. That's the kind of effect it has. It's not a film I sit down and go, ooh, this is a really interesting artistic choice. It's not that I ever do that because I'm not a twat, it's like an old friend. Anyway, that's my view on Jaws. Lovely film, could watch it anytime.
Yeah.
I say lovely film, that's a bit. It's a great.
It's a lovely film.
It's a lovely movie. It's a good old roller coaster ride.
Well, I think we're on to recommendations now.
Oh, yeah, you go first.
Recommendations. I guess because we're still being in the sort of 70s movie brats era, well, New Hollywood, but they were calling it movie brats, I'm going to recommend one of my favorite directors, Hal Ashby. I'm going to recommend Coming Home with John Voight and Jane Fonda.
Oh, yeah.
And my favorite actor, Bruce Dern.
Oh, I'd love to see him.
It's a great movie. You have it.
I have it at home. Yeah, you left it with me. I tell you what, I'll watch it. Yeah,
when you go home tomorrow or later or whatever, whenever you're going home, you can watch it.
Yeah, no, I will. I'll check it out. It's interesting because it's similar to The Deer Hunter in terms of its theme, and it didn't.
The effects of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, exactly, and it's sort of lost. Because The Deer Hunter kind of has it covered and is so famous as such a sacred cow. Yeah. So, yeah, I would really, really like to see that. My one is actually a Danish film that you might not have seen. It's called Hvidstenskruppen. That means the White Stone, which is the name of the place, the group. It's about a resistance. Some people, the Danish resistance. It came out a few years ago. It's incredibly good.
Sorry.
Excellent podcast material here, lots of coughing. Really, really exciting, very well acted, true story. Check it out.
Anyway, on to birthdays.
Oh yes, let's see whose birthday it is.
Birthday boy today is James McAvoy, who is 36.
James McAvoy.
He's 36 today.
36 already.
He's winning at the moment.
Winning.
He's in the X-Men franchise. He's doing fucking great.
Oh, don't use winning in that term. That bloody hashtag.
He was one of the main high points.
I don't give a shit about X-Men. Don't use bloody X-Men winning.
X-Men Days of Future
You're
Past.
You're not Charlie Sheen.
Can I... winning.
Yeah. Never do that again.
I am on a drug. It's called Charlie Sheen.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But Tiger Blood. No. Like, he was great in Filth. But, like, if you watch X-Men... Oh, wait, I know you're not going to watch X-Men Days of Future Past. But I remember watching that film. I mean, it's not a great movie. It's a pretty fun summer movie like Jaws. But his performance in that movie is incredible. I was very much blown away by it for a comic book film. I was like, wow. Apart from the fact that it is an X-Men film and they combine all the... old, like, two casts from the original films and also the prequels, so you have Patrick Stewart, who played Professor X in the first three, and then you have James McAvoy sharing a scene together. It's just kind of like nerds are just kind of like on the screen and stuff.
That's disgusting.
Sorry.
And incredibly boring. I have no interest in it. Although that does remind me of that. I was watching some telly recently. I saw this American comedian whose name, unfortunately, I can't remember. But he did this wonderful bit about X-Men. He's talking about there's one of them who can, like, adapt to any situation. So if, like, he sticks his head in water, he grows gills.
He's called Darwin.
Anyway, and he was going, well, you know, this guy was like, well, if he can adapt to any, like, if, you know, to match his environment perfectly, why the hell is he black in 1969? It's like, you wouldn't need to grow bulletproof skin.
Oh my god, that's funny.
I thought that was quite amusing.
Anyway, so
who else's birthday? Happy birthday, James McAvoy.
Toby Stevens, who played Gustav Graves in Die Another Day.
Oh, what? That, I hate that film. What else has he been? Has he done anything else?
He's on that
least memorable Bond villain of all time. Your fucking career? What is the? That film makes so little sense, even for a Bond film, and is so poor.
Yeah, it is pretty.
Although
bad.
It does have Michael Madsen in it, who I love,
and Halle Berry in a bikini. So that's
yeah. Who gives a fuck about that? But this isn't the bloody 14-year-olds convention. Halle Berry in a bikini.
Well, he's in. He's doing pretty well with Bobby. He's in that TV show Black Sails, which is like this pirate show.
Really? There's a pirate show?
Yeah, it's a pirate show.
Ooh.
I think Michael Bay produced it.
Oh God.
He's an executive producer.
Oh God. Oh well, there you go.
Yeah. Andie MacDowell has her birthday today.
Don't like Andie MacDowell.
Okay. Anthony Quinn has his birthday today.
What a great actor.
Ah, he's amazing.
What's your favourite Anthony Quinn film?
I would have to say Warlock.
You know what? I was going to say that as well. Yeah. Really good Western.
Really good Western.
Henry Fonda, Richard Widmark, directed by Eddie Dimitrik. Very good film.
Really good director. Mm. Charles Grodin, who plays the dad in Beethoven.
Oh, and he's in... He turned up in While We're Young. He plays father in that film.
I really want to watch that movie.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's a really good film.
Noah Baumbach film, right?
Yeah, it didn't take... It lost a few opportunities to really explore some good, what I thought would have been interesting storytelling avenues that it didn't go down. It was a bit too much Ben Stiller. But yeah, it was a solid film, but well worth seeing.
Yeah.
Who else we got?
We missed Rob Riggle, who plays...
Rob Riggle? He's... Speaking of porn names, we just can't keep doing this.
No, he's the guy in 21 Jump Street. He's the guy who gets his dick shot off and he tries to pick it up with his mouth, bad guy.
He gets his Rod Riggle shot off.
Yeah.
Right, I'm definitely calling mine Rod Riggle from now on.
Jeff Anderson, who plays Randall in Clerks, his birthday's today.
Mm.
You know they're doing Clerks 3.
Oh, God. Leave that alone, guys.
I'm looking forward to that.
Of course you are.
That and Mallrats too.
Yeah.
Iggy Pop has his birthday today.
Iggy Pop! What a legend.
Yeah.
He's so... Yeah, yes. He's just a hero. Total hero. He goes swimming in the sea every day. That's one of my favourite things about him. Just, like... Total survivor legend. That's my favourite of the list so far, I think. It'll be between him and Anthony Quinn.
James Morrison, not the famous singer, the actor who played Bill Buchanan on 24, his birthday's day as well.
Who's Bill? Wait, is Bill Buchanan the sort of older bloke who runs?
He's the white guy, white-haired guy who runs...
they're all white. Except if they're black, it means they die in the second episode.
It's pretty much every character on...
Yeah, if you put on American TV.
He plays Bill Buchanan.
Yeah. He's also in an episode of The West Wing. He plays the pilot on Air Force One.
Queen Elizabeth II has her birthday today as well.
Or which one? Her real one or her official?
The second one.
Well, then.
Elizabeth II.
It's an old German
kid. Elaine May, her birthday is today as
well. Who's Elaine May?
She is a screenwriter, an actress and a screenwriter. She was,
You don't know.
I do know who she is.
I'm just looking it up.
No. Oh, no. Oh, I know who she is. Elaine May. She was the one who was, her and Mike Nichols had this big comedy duo thing that went on for a really long time. That was his big break. He was a radio presenter. He ran a student radio, and that's how he got into it, and that was his first gig. And they did all these little comedy gigs. They had a lot of their shows they got Tonys out of it. That's how he got the EGOT, because he won a Tony for that, and a Grammy because they had a CD for their concert. But they had a relationship for a period of time, but then they had a falling out and they broke up. But she actually wrote...
As lovers often will.
They were regarded as the two fastest humans of all time. And she wrote the screenplay for Primary Colors, the John Travolta... Bill Clinton.
Oh, film. Yeah, yeah.
And she also wrote the screenplay for The Birdcage, the Le Cage aux Folles remake.
Oh, anyway.
That is another episode of Holmes Movies. The movie that we've been talking about today is Jaws, and... apologies for spoiling the movie, but then again, the movie came out in 1975.
Oh, yeah, it's not even worth saying spoiler alert or anything like that. It's just like...
Most people would have seen it already, but if you haven't seen it, watch it.
There are other movie podcasts out there that I listen to, and they're obviously much better than this one.
Very much.
And
so.
I tend not to listen to ones about films I've not seen, because... it sort of would, I don't know, hearing all that analysis, even if they didn't give anything away, I feel like whenever I go and watch a film, the less I know about it, the better. But that's just me. If you want to listen to this and haven't seen Jaws, be my guest. As long as you listen to it, I don't care, frankly.
Yeah. We didn't spoil How the Shark Dies, though.
That's true.
But we'll leave that.
We'll leave that for you to find out. Smile, you son of a bitch.
There we go. That's a good way to end it. I have been Anders Holmes.
And I have been Adam Holmes.
Thank you very much for listening to us, and have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.